All right, well, welcome to our the beginning of our Bible study in the book of Daniel. And I've just handed out a couple of things that will be useful in our study here and maybe link some things together for you and make some things understandable. And it's amazing how many things come together in the book of Daniel and throughout the Old Testament. So we'll be looking at those. But we're going to start off this morning by just reading chapter 1. Of Daniel. It's only 12 verses long. Daniel 1:1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar to the house of his God. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. And he spake unto Ashpenaz, the king, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel and the king's seed and of the princes, children in whom was no blemish, but well favored, skillful in all wisdom and cunning in knowledge and understanding in science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, whom they might teach the learning and tongue of the Chaldeans. And the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. Now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names, for he gave unto Daniel the name of Belteshazzar, and unto Hananiah of Shadrach, and unto Mishael of Meshach, and unto Azariah of Abednego. But Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with a portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Now God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear, my lord, the king, who hath appointed your meat and your drink, for why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me endanger my head to the king. Then said Daniel to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days, and let them give us pulse to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenances be looked upon before thee, and the countenance of the children that eat of the portion of the king's meat, as thou seest, deal with thy servants. So he consented to them in this matter, and proved them 10 days, and at the end of 10 days their countenances appeared fairer and fatter in flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Thus Melzar took away the portion of their meat and wine that they should drink, and gave them pulse. As for these 4 children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. Now at the end of the days that the king had said that they should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king communed with them, and among them all was none, or found none, like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore stood they before the king. And in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in his realm. And Daniel continued even into the first year of King Cyrus. So, chapter 1 is really, it's a summary, and from beginning to end, it covers a span of some 70 years. Verses 1 through 18 cover about 3 years, because that's how long the king said, I want you to take these kids and fatten them up and then bring them back in, and we'll take a look at them in 3 years. So that transpired in this period that we just read about, verse 1 through 18. And then he says, and it continued unto the reign of Cyrus, which was the end of the captivity, 70 years. So So one thing to understand about Daniel, it's not really a linear book. There's 12 chapters, but it kind of goes back and forth. And kind of reminds me of Genesis, because in Genesis 1, we have the creation. And then in chapter 2, it goes back and fills in some details about some things that happened during that creation. So it's kind of similar to that literary style. Daniel is a remnant according to the election of grace. Daniel is a record of that remnant. And it says here he was brought into favor. And many times we find in Daniel that he's called beloved of the Lord. And that's what God, that's how God looks at all his people, beloved of the Lord. And even though things transpired, it's just such an interesting book. They were like carried away with all the idolaters, even though he was beloved of the Lord, and there was something special about him because he was beloved of the Lord, and the Lord had caused them to have greater understanding and wisdom and knowledge and understanding dreams and all those things. So it's a remarkable book. Daniel chapter 1 marks the fulfillment of the prophecies of Jeremiah and Isaiah, which were written about 700 B.C. I passed out this my stick people timeline here. And it starts here with the Solomon completes the temple in the 957 B.C., just for a reference point. And this whole chart here is not made to so you can do math. It's just made to kind of show you the relationship of everything and what's going on. One of the things about Daniel is we know that all the things that Daniel prophesied about took place.
Amen.
There's a record of them. And we know that God said it would be this long from the beginning of it till the end. Just as he said that there would be 70 years captivity, that transpired just as he said. So we don't need to do the math. We just have to read the results and say, I'm pretty sure God got it right. So we don't need to sit there and try to make the numbers line up and go into the Hebrew calendar was this way, and they had 5 days less a year than the American calendar, and the Chaldean calendar was different, and et cetera, et cetera. So we don't really need any of that. But if you look on this chart here, we find the approximate date of the birth of Daniel at about 620 B.C. And then we find that the captivity took place roughly about 605 B.C. And that would have put Daniel being around mid-teenager when that occurred. 12 to 15 years. We'll just say 15 because that's what I have on my chart. I'm right. So in this book of Daniel chapter 1, we find that 3 years goes by from the time, and maybe a little longer because they had to walk from Jerusalem to Babylon. So at the end of 3 years, he would have been about 18. He would have been a young man. And we find that Nebuchadnezzar said, boy, these guys are pretty witty. These guys are pretty smart. These guys are pretty intelligent. These guys are pretty wise. And he took note of that. And he throughout the book of Daniel, we find that they were made rulers. They were part of the government of Babylon. They were made advisors and governors in the kingdom, and which irritated the locals, no end. But so we find Daniel probably at the end of chapter 1, he's probably about 18, And there was really three conquests of Jerusalem by the Babylonians, because if you remember in our introduction, we said that the Egyptians had invaded Babylon, and then the Babylonians fought back and they smote them from Carchemish, which is on your map there up in the upper part of Babylon. There's a circle around it. And then there's a red line that goes all the way down to another circle that says Sinai. So the Babylonians smote the Egyptians all the way from Carchemish all the way down into Sinai. And then they went back north because across that, straight across from Jerusalem to Babylon is about 750 miles of desert wherein is no water. Be hard to take care of an army and plus a load of prisoners going across that. So they went up the coast back to Carchemish and then down the Euphrates River to Babylon. And along the way, I think they, as mentioned to Norm this morning, I think they took all these prisoners in Jerusalem and then they kind of dispersed them throughout their kingdom as slaves and workers and hewers of wood and drawers of water along the way. And so they didn't all end up in the city of Babylon, but choicest ones went to Babylon where the king was. And the rest of them were dispersed. And we have records of that in Nehemiah and Ezra and the other prophets. We find Esther was in Shushan. Esther and Mordecai and Nehemiah were in Shushan. Daniel went to Shushan all the time because in chapter 8 says he was there on the king's business when he had one of his visions. And so Daniel was kind of all over that kingdom doing errands for the king. And so Shushan is marked out there on the right side in the province of Elam, it says in your scripture. And then we have the Euphrates River there that red line goes along. And then next to that is the Tigris. And then right above Babylon, there's a place where the Tigris and the Euphrates River come to pretty close together. And it seems like the Babylonians dug a little channel through there and made a canal that linked those two rivers together. And they call that the River Chebar. And that's where we find Ezekiel and a group of captives on the River Chebar in Ezekiel chapter 1. So I was on the River Chebar when a bunch of the captives came to me and wanted to know why God was mad at them. So I, 13 chapters, told them, "You idolatrous people, you." And then in chapter 14, he mentions Daniel. And so he was a contemporary of Daniel there, and he knew about Daniel. Daniel would have been about 30 when Ezekiel wrote chapter 14. Daniel would have been a mature 30-year-old man that was well known in the kingdom, very wise. And so we'll probably read that in another lesson here, but many of the prophecies come together right in this block. We have Ezekiel, we have Ezra, we have Jeremiah, Isaiah, and in Isaiah, the 39th chapter, we have this, you're probably familiar with this from some other lessons, if you'll recall that Hezekiah was king and the Babylonians came to town and he was showing off all the treasure in the house, bragging about it and everything. And Isaiah writes in chapter 39, "Then said Isaiah to Hezekiah," and this would have been written about 728 BC to 6 86 BC was the time of Isaiah there. Hear the word of the Lord of hosts. And he goes on to tell him about the Babylonians going to come invade him. But, you know, the Assyrians came first in 701 BC and invaded Jerusalem and besieged them and sacked them. So this is, you got bad. I got bad news and bad news. Which will you like first? But anyway, he says, behold, the days come that all that is in thine house that you just got through bragging about, and that which thy fathers have laid up in store unto this day shall be carried to Babylon. Nothing shall be left, saith the Lord. And that happened in 597 to 587. There was three invasions of the Babylonians, because when they smote those Egyptians down to Sinai, and the Jewish people were paying tribute to the Egyptians, and after the Babylonians kicked them out, they said, okay, now you pay us that money instead of them. And then every couple of years they didn't do that, and so the Babylonians would come over and besiege them and kill them and make them promise to pay, and then they would, they're just like they did with the Lord. Yeah, all that thou sayest we will do. And then they didn't do it. And so they got besieged again. And he says, and all thy sons that shall issue from thee shall thou, that thou shall beget, shall they take away, and they shall be eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. That's what Isaiah wrote to Hezekiah centuries before this would happen. Then Jeremiah in chapter 25, you'll turn there to Jeremiah chapter 25. The word that came to Jeremiah in verse 1 of chapter 25, the word that came to Jeremiah concerning all the people of Judah in the fourth year of Jehoiakim, the son of Josiah, king of Judah, that was the first year of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, the which Jeremiah the prophet spake unto all the people of Judah and to all the inhabitants of Jerusalem, saying, from the 13th year of Josiah, the son of Ammon, king of Judah, even unto this day, that is the 23rd year, the word of the Lord hath come unto me, and I have spoken unto you, rising early and speaking, but you have not hearkened. That was just he sent them prophets that they maltreated and abused and didn't listen. They said, turn you again now, everyone, from his own evil way and from the evil of your doings, and dwell in the land that the Lord hath given you and to your fathers forever and ever, and go not after other gods to serve them and to worship them, and provoke me not to anger with the works of your hands, and I will do you no hurt. Yet you have not hearkened unto me, saith the Lord, that you might provoke me to anger with the works of your hands to your own hurt. Therefore, thus saith the Lord of hosts, because you have not heard my words, behold, I will send and take all the families of the north, saith the Lord, and Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, my servant, will bring them against this land and against the inhabitants thereof and against all these nations round about, and will utterly destroy them and make them an astonishment and a hissing and a perpetual desolation. And moreover, I will take from them the voice of mirth and the voice of gladness and the voice of the bridegroom and the voice of the bride and the sound of millstones and the light of the candle. And this whole land shall be desolation and astonishment. And these nations shall serve the king of Babylon 70 years. And it shall come to pass when the 70 years are accomplished, that I'll punish the king of Babylon and that nation, saith the Lord, for their iniquity in the land of the Chaldeans, and will make it a perpetual desolation. And I will bring upon that land all my words which I have pronounced against it, even all that's written in this book which Jeremiah the prophet hath prophesied against all the nations. For many nations and great kings shall serve themselves also, and I will recompense them according to their deeds, according to their work of their own hands. So here we have this specific prophecy that they're going to be taken captive and be slaves in Babylon 70 years. And so you can see that on the timeline here, about 605 BC in the middle of your page there, where Jeremiah prophesied that that was going to happen, and then that indeed did happen. And Nebuchadnezzar did besiege Jerusalem three times. Each time he inflicted a little more damage on them. First time he just went down there and beat them up and said, "Pay me." And they said, "Okay." And the second time he beat them up and took captives and took all the treasure, or part of the treasure. It says he took a part of the treasure out of the temple. And all these young people and that were supposed to go before the king. And then the third time he came in 587 BC, he just took everybody that was useful, and they wrecked the city, and they burned the temple and all the houses of the great men, and they burned the whole town down and destroyed everything. That's so when you look up there at the Solomon completes that temple in 957 BC, then we get down here to 587 BC, and it's destroyed, burned up, and pillaged. And they took, the last time they went there, they took all, even the brass. They took away and they carved up the brass into chunks that they could carry, and all the rest of the treasure and stuff. And they only left the useless people in town. So in 2 Kings 24, you'll find that we might have that here. In our reading. So in Jeremiah we have that prophecy of 70 years of captivity, and again we go back to Leviticus because it said because they didn't keep the Sabbath of the land was the reason, and in addition to the idolatries, but the root cause was they didn't even keep the Sabbath of the land that the Lord said that they should, every 7 years they should let the land rest, and it would be a Sabbath of the land. And we find that in 2 Chronicles chapter 36, 21. And that's referencing Leviticus 25. And so this failure to keep the Sabbath of the land is specifically mentioned there in 2 Chronicles chapter 36. In verse 17 says, "Therefore he brought upon them the king of the Chaldees, the Babylonians, who slew their young men with the sword in the house of their sanctuary." So some of them took refuge in the temple, and they just went in there and chopped them and killed them anyway. And they had no compassion on young man or maiden, old man or him that stooped for age. He gave them all into his hand. And then if we read down through verse 21, it says, "To fulfill the word of the Lord by the mouth of Jeremiah, until the land had enjoyed her Sabbath, for as long as she lay desolate, she kept Sabbath to fulfill 70 years. 70 years, just like Jeremiah said. So we have this cause of the rebellion. You know, this siege, there was actually, again, the three wars against Jerusalem. For failing to pay, 605, 597, and 587 BC. And again, at the captivity, much of the temple treasure was taken. And it says in 2 Kings 24:11 that they took the choice people captive. The poorer sort were left behind. The poorer sort were just, "You're not going to be useful for it to us in Babylon. We don't want you, and we're not going to feed you and care for you all the way back to Babylon." And remember on that map, I mentioned this to you here in the introduction. If you look at that where Jerusalem is on that map, and there's a little red circle around Jerusalem, then there's a red line that goes all the way up to Aleppo and up toward Carchemish, and then follows the Euphrates River all the way back down to Babylon. That would have been 1,750 miles a walk. And so maybe you could understand why them children of the Hebrews needed to be fattened up a little bit when they got to Babylon. It was probably pretty raggedy looking by the time they got to the king's palace there. And this the final siege saw the remainder of the vessels and implements of the temple taken. The temple, the king's house, and much of Jerusalem burned and the walls broken down. Jeremiah was taken prisoner at this time. And then you find that in 2 Kings chapter 25, verse 8, and in Jeremiah 39, verse 6 through 11. The king said, take Jeremiah, but don't hurt him. You take him, but you take good care of him. He did not want to cause harm to Jeremiah the prophet. It is funny that the enemy took more notice and took better care of him than his own people, who ignored him and mocked him and disregarded him totally. And so in Jeremiah chapter 39:8, he describes that, and he says, and the Chaldeans burned the king's house and the houses of the people with fire, and they broke down the walls of Jerusalem. And then they took him prisoner. So now we have this captivity walk. 1,750 miles. And I was telling Norman, I think probably what they did was when they got up into the Babylonian main part of the empire, up from Carchemish and down the Euphrates River, they dispersed those captives along the way for workers and slaves and whatnot. And we find, you know, some of them were in this area and some of them were in that area. And Ezekiel said in his book, well, I was by the river Chebar when the captives came to me and wanted to know why God was mad at them. And Nehemiah, we find Nehemiah was in Shushan when he was given his permission to go back and do his part in the rebuilding of the Jerusalem and the temple area. And then Esther and Mordecai in Shushan and so quite a few references to those captives in the Old Testament there. And so I wanted to spend just a minute. We have 10 or so minutes left in our time here, and I thought it was valuable for the church, because here were some folks that God beloved. And they were in the middle of an idolatrous country that continually rejected God. And yet they were swept right up along with all of them according to the purposes of God. And then we looked and we found that through all of that, somehow it ended up in Matthew 1:21 in the lineage of the Lord, coming down to the birth of Christ. And so he had his purpose in it, but I'm sure those people that were living, you know, Daniel and his friends, they're seeing what's going on in their country. Man, look at all this idolatry going on here. Look at all the bad stuff that's going on. Not much they could probably do about it, but they got swept right along with the rest of them. And I'm sure they said, well, this looks like it's working out for good. But I'm sure that in their heart they knew that somehow God was working things for good. And they went along and did what they were supposed to do, and God blessed them and took care of them, just like Joseph down in Egypt. He made that eunuch down there, that head of the servants, love him. And we just find that that's just the way things go with the children of God. And so as these youths, they march this 1,750-mile trip down to Babylon. And they left Jerusalem, which the size of Jerusalem at the time was about 0.35 square miles. And the temple was the main, the temple in the king's house was the main feature of it. But it was relatively small. Daniel, a prince of Judah, it says there in our block of scripture that we read, they're called children in Daniel 1:17. And you know, when they got to Babylon, they went into this heavy indoctrination situation where they tried to indoctrinate them into the, that's what the king wants. I want them to be knowledgeable and learn the Chaldean. I want them to learn our language, learn our gods, learn our religion, learn all of our stuff. They changed Daniel, whose name meant judge of God, to Belteshazzar, which is a Baal, or Baal will protect. They changed Hananiah, which means Jah or Jehovah has favored, to Shadrach, which means command of Eku, the moon god. And Azariah, Jah or Jehovah has helped. They changed to Abednego, servant or slave of Nego, the god of wisdom and writing. So they tried to take away their any relationship or any knowledge or any link to the true God and give them these other names. So they come in, they leave this relatively small thing of Jerusalem, and they come to Babylon, which the Hanging Gardens of Babylon was listed as one of the seven wonders of the world. They weren't hanging like Yvonne has all these pots that hang on hooks and stuff. Hanging there meant kind of like a terraced. So they have these terraces that had these big gardens in it. So it means suspended or elevated off the ground, not hanging like by a string. Babylon covered about 60 square miles. Jerusalem covered 0.35. So I just want you to, in your mind, say, here are these Hebrew children coming from the place where the true God was supposed to be worshipped in a temple, that where the word of God was abhorred, and even the sacrifices were corrupted. Everything was bad there. Then they come to Babylon. Whoa. Babylon, 60 square miles, roughly the size of Washington, D.C. Washington, D.C. is 68 square miles. Think of all the monuments and things that are in Washington, D.C. You've got the parks and the statues, the Capitol building, the White House, the Lincoln Memorial, Washington Monument, Jefferson Memorial, Library of Congress, Smithsonian, Vietnam Memorial, Washington Cathedral, Arlington National Cemetery, just to name a few things in that size of an area. Babylon was 15 miles on a side. That would be like almost from here to Dufour or Mosier. The walls were like 25 foot thick. And 200 to 300 feet high. According to historian Herodotus, and even allowing for exaggeration, it would have been pretty astounding. And I have a little article here that I copied from Uriah Smith's book that he wrote on Daniel 1941. I wanted to read this real quick here, but and think about it in terms of, compare this and then think about what John wrote about New Jerusalem in Revelation. The character of the Babylonian Empire is indicated by the head of gold, which we get into a little bit later in the visions. It was a golden kingdom of a golden age. Babylon, its metropolis, towered to a height never reached by any of its successors, situated in the Garden of the East, laid out in a perfect square, said to be 60 miles in circumference, 15 miles on each side, surrounded by a wall estimated to have been 200 to 300 feet high and 87 feet thick, with a moat or ditch around this of equal cubic capacity with the wall itself, divided into squares by its many streets. Each one of the streets was 150 feet in width, crossing at right angles, every one of them straight and level. It's 225 square miles of enclosed surface, laid out in luxuriant pleasure grounds and gardens, interspersed with magnificent dwellings. The city, with its 60 miles of moat, its 60 miles of outer wall, 30 miles of river wall through the center. The Euphrates River ran right through the middle of town, and they had big gates that over the river that closed together to block in, so you couldn't come in there by boat or anything if they didn't let you. Gates of solid brass, hanging gardens, rising terrace above terrace until they equaled in height the wall themselves. Its temple of Belus, 3 miles in circumference. It's 2 royal palaces, 1 3.5 and the other 8 miles in circumference, with a subterranean tunnel under the Euphrates connecting the two palaces. They dug a tunnel underneath the, back in 500 BC or 600 BC, they dug a tunnel under the Euphrates River and made a passageway to the between the two temples. Its perfect arrangement for convenience, ornament, and defense, and its unlimited resources, this city containing in itself many things which were themselves wonders of the world, was by itself another and still a mightier wonder. Can you imagine those guys? I remember what it was like when me and my brother moved from the hay fields of southern Oregon up to Hood River, and they had an actual swimming pool in a theater downtown that you could go to for 75 cents. We are in Babylon now. You know, they marched 1,750 miles. The Oregon Trail was about 2,170 miles by way of comparison. And they made that trip, if they didn't die from typhus or broken wagon wheel or starvation, 4 to 6 months to make that journey from St. Louis to the Willamette Valley. And so we're about out of time. We conclude the first chapter of Daniel, greatly beloved of God, he's called, who by the Spirit would announce the time of the coming of Messiah the Prince, who would be cut off, but not for himself. What a gospel tale we have there. And the remnant in the land according to the election of grace. Let's, we've got just a minute, but let's let's turn to Ezekiel chapter 14. As he writes this, from the river Chebar, that little canal they dug between the Euphrates and the Tigris River there north of Babylon little ways. In chapter 14, in verse 14, he's writing, he says, though these three men, Noah and Daniel and Job, were in it, they should deliver but their own souls by their righteousness, saith the Lord God. So he's talking about this problem in Jerusalem and in the land of Israel there. And he says, even though I bring swords and beasts and all these against it. Let's go down to verse 22. Yet, behold, therein shall be left a remnant that shall be brought forth, both sons and daughters. Behold, they shall come forth unto you, and you shall see their ways and their doings, and you shall be comforted concerning the evil that I have brought upon Jerusalem, even concerning all that I have brought upon it. There's going to be a remnant, and you're going to be able to look at those remnant and see Matthew chapter 1. Verse 21. She shall bring forth a son, and his name will be Jesus. So we'll stop there. Chapter 1. Next time we'll try to tackle chapter 2 in one chunk here. So thanks for your attention, and as always, be free.